The following podcast is a Dear Media production.
Dear Media IRL is back, and we're showing up bigger, better, and louder than ever. Join us on May 4th in Austin, Texas for the ultimate live podcasting experience. Watch and learn from your favorite Dear Media hosts as they bring their insightful discussions from your headphones to the stage. Get ready to be inspired, entertained, and watch audio get a makeover. Tickets are on sale now at dearmedia.com/IRL. See you on May 4th in Austin, Texas.
Welcome to the Blonde Files podcast. I'm your host, Arielle Lori, and I'm here to talk all things wellness, from how to achieve optimal health and well-being to the best beauty tips and everything in between. No topic is off limits. I know there's so much information out there, so I'm bringing on expert guests and sharing my own experiences to help you sift through all the wellness stuff without the BS. Enjoy the show. Hi, everybody. Welcome to the show. I love today's episode so much. This was one of those conversations where I just felt so present and so in the flow of the conversation and so fascinated by the subject matter. And I have to say, going into it, I didn't think that I was going to relate so much to the topic that we were talking about. But as we were in conversation, you'll hear in the episode, I was having revelation after revelation about my life. So my guest is Dr. Scott Lyons. He is a licensed holistic psychologist. He's an educator, and he's the author of the book, Addicted to Drama, Healing Dependency on Crisis and Chaos in Yourself and Others. He's also the host of the Gently Used Human podcast, which is truly a delightfully depthful and often hilarious exploration of what it is to be human, to have lived life and come out gently used. So we are talking about the concepts in his book about being addicted to drama and having this dependency on crisis and chaos. And I really didn't identify this because I avoid drama like the plague. I avoid crisis and chaos. And especially since becoming sober, you know, I was really taught to only look for solutions and not stay in problems. So I didn't think that any of this would pertain to me, but it was so fascinating to explore how this can manifest in our lives, even if we are people who avoid confrontation and avoid drama. And, you know, we looked at it all the way back to early childhood. And I think that you guys will probably come away with this, having had some epiphanies of your own as well. So we are talking about, of course, our culture's addiction to drama and stress. We talk about toxic relationships, to overscheduling our lives, how to cope with it all, and how to stay grounded in a performative world. We talk about social media, authenticity, urgency culture, trauma, and so much more. It is such a fun, fascinating conversation. I absolutely adore my guest. So please enjoy Dr. Scott Lyons. Welcome, Dr. Scott.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So excited to have you here. We've already been talking about crystal dildos and tax evasion.
Tax evasion, so, and lots of interesting, fancy, fun things.
Off to a great start here. Sorry to the listeners, but we might not be getting too far into those subjects today. We'll see where the conversation goes. But today we're really going to be focusing on this addiction to drama and stress, which I think is so relevant right now. I've been listening to you on some other podcasts, and it's really kind of shifted my perspective around this in a lot of ways. So I'm really excited to delve into it with you today. But can you tell your listeners a little bit about your background and how you came to focus on this?
Yeah. So my background is I was an artist first and got into kind of health and wellness because I was interested in for myself, and then started going into school for it, and always had sort of this flair for the dramatic. One might have said I am a recovering drama addict. You know, by the time I was picking like my topic for my dissertation in school, my focus for my thesis, I was like, okay, what has not been talked about, but I've experienced a lot of either in my own life. I mean, I come from a long lineage of drama addicts. And so I picked that topic to actually delve into the research because I was like, everybody knows someone addicted to drama. Like we all know someone, but it's hard to define. And there's no actual research out there to prove what we all kind of know just by being human. Mm-hmm. And so that's how I got into the topic of it. And, you know, definitely from a personal perspective and my own healing from it. And then from an academic side of going, like, what is the missing link here that why we know it but don't know it? And then as a clinician, I saw it in my office all the time. People were crisis hopping. They couldn't let themselves settle or relax as we were doing some deep healing work, that they had to jump into the next issue always. And there was something like, it was almost like a reflex reaction that they couldn't let themselves find peace.
Hmm. Yeah. I wanted to ask you, what does it look like when one is addicted to drama?
Yeah.
I'm like, well, I don't really have any drama in my life, but it can look like different things.
It
can look like overworking, overscheduling, overstimulation, right?
Yeah.
So for the listeners who might be feeling like they're not identifying as somebody who's addicted to drama, what are some of the ways that it takes form?
Yeah. It looks really different from the outside than it does from the inside. So, I mean, one of the things we recognize as like from the outside is like there's a disproportionate amount of energy and behavior and the decibel of intensity that's like their reaction versus what's actually happening. When we're around someone addicted to drama, we'll go, wait, what just happened?
Mm-hmm.
What was that? And how am I suddenly involved in it? And it's, you're right, it's, it can be anything from overscheduling to getting into the fast and furious aspects of relationship and the fast and furious exits of relationships. Mm-hmm. It's constant fights, you know, really getting sucked into the news and feeling like you're becoming part of it, or social media. But essentially what it boils down to, these are all just different behaviors. And the underlying thing is how we are interrupting our own sense of peace.
Mm-hmm.
And we do that because finding peace or stillness or settledness actually brings us closer to the underlying pain and trauma that we're trying to avoid.
Mm-hmm.
So in that way, like, trauma is something that keeps us far enough away from ourselves and the pain that we've been harboring for mm-hmm. so long.
So is trauma at the root of all of this?
Yeah. You know, we chase the drama to avoid our trauma over and over again. We find what distracts us. And there's something about, you know, when I say addiction to drama, we're talking about addicted to stress. It's mm-hmm. kind of the same thing.
Okay.
And, you know, stress actually does things for our body that are good. You know, we often think of stress as like the big bad thing in the closet that's coming out to kill us. And stress is actually our biological process of how we adapt. It means essentially how we get all this energy released in our body to adapt to whatever the situation is. And that's all it is. And stress does other things. Like, if you've ever gone for a good run and you're like, oh my God, I feel kind of awesome. Mm-hmm. I feel really good. That endorphic high. So that's a stress response. You're stressing your body physically and you have that endorphin release. What that does is it actually blocks the pain receptors. So when we're in a constant state of stress, we are blocking the pain receptors that Whoa. We experience, right?
Interesting. Yeah.
And like, and other things, like if you've ever enjoyed a good cup of coffee in the morning and then you become exhausted. And over time, a lot of us are exhausted of just dealing with life.
Mm-hmm.
And when we feel stressed out, we feel like, whoa, all of a sudden we drink that cup of coffee, like we could fight anyone.
Mm-hmm.
That's that energy, that cortisol and all the chemicals releasing. And it gives us that energy, the energy boost, and we become attached to it. It's more accessible than coffee and it's a lot more free.
Mm-hmm.
And it actually lasts longer
mm-hmm.
than the cup of coffee.
Yeah.
You know, it typically is a 90-minute boost every time we go into like that cortisol glucocorticoid reaction.
Mm. But interesting.
I like to say glucocoid. It's stress hormones.
Okay.
It just sounds sexy. Glucocoid. And it's, you know, stress is also a bonding agent. It's a social glue. If you and I went through a stressful experience, we would actually feel closer than if we didn't go through a stressful experience together.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, from the inside, those who are addicted to drama, they feel constantly alone. They feel like the world's out to get them. They feel like a victim. They feel like they're being rushed. They're out of rhythm. They're out of sync with the world. They always feel like something bad is about to happen or mm-hmm. is happening.
Mm-hmm.
So if they get pain relief, if they get energy, if they get a sense of social connection, of course, anyone's going to be attached to something that gives them that.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, addiction is essentially anything that fills a void. We become attached, dependent on something that fills the void. Yeah, there's, you know, phases like, you know, we grow tolerance to something. We energy and our attention becomes consumed with it. We go through withdrawal symptoms. All of that actually is true with drama or stress, is that we become tolerant to it. We need more stress to get that high, to get the pain relief, to get the energy boost, to get the sense of connection. And we go through withdrawal symptoms just like heroin.
That's crazy.
I know. And in addiction to drama, it comes out in the shape of boredom and anxiety, which is wild.
I think oftentimes wellness can feel overwhelming and it can feel impossible to prioritize wellness in our lives. But I have to tell you guys about Allo Moves because this changed my whole mindset. So this app makes it super easy to keep my wellness routine on track because they have everything in one place. It's not just a workout app. Yes, they have yoga, Pilates, and fitness classes, but they also have mindfulness. They have amazing self-care tips. They have healthy recipes and so much more. When it comes to movement, Allo Moves has the flow or the class that will fit your schedule. They have classes that range from 5 minutes to an hour, depending on what I'm feeling that day. And also they have classes from beginner to advanced. If you are trying to get in a really good sweat, then you have to try their award-winning workouts like sweat-inducing yoga flows, which I've been loving lately. They also have amazing HIIT classes. They have reformer Pilates workouts with or without weights. They have so much variety. But if you're looking for something else, they have incredible meditations. They have affirmations. They even have face yoga and gua sha and dry brushing. This is where I learned how to dry brush. They also have journaling for those quiet moments. And of course, you guys know that I think sleep is the foundation to my wellness. It's just as important as fitness and nutrition. So ever since I watched The Art of Sleep on Allo Moves, I have been falling asleep faster and staying asleep longer. So unlock your personal wellness routine with Allo Moves. Go to allomoves.com now and use the code BLONDE30 for an exclusive 30-day free trial and enjoy 20% off an annual membership. This is such an amazing deal because you are getting so much content, like I said, for every area of your life, not just exercise. So again, that's allomoves.com and the code is BLONDE30. Again, allomoves.com, code BLONDE30. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. A lot of us spend our lives wishing that we had more time, but I think we don't really play the tape through. So the big question is, time for what? If our time was unlimited, how would we use it? I have found that the best way to squeeze that special thing into my schedule is to know what is important to me and to make it a priority. And sometimes this can be hard to figure out on our own. So something that really helped me is therapy. Therapy can help you find what matters to you so that you can do more of it. I am very open about the fact that I have been in and out of therapy for most of my life and have really benefited from it in the past few years. I think a big misconception about therapy is that it is only for difficult times or major traumas. And this is just simply not the case. I have actually found that I have benefited the most from therapy, I think, when things are going really well for me, because I learn positive coping skills. I learn how to set boundaries. I feel empowered to be the best version of myself. And I can figure out what is important to me, what my priorities are, and adjust so that I am moving in that direction and making room for those things in my life. So if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. All you have to do is fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and you can switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. So learn to make time for what makes you happy with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/files today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/files.
I've been sober for a long time, and in sobriety, I
learned to kind of live like around a 6 or a 7. Like I don't need the high highs and I don't need the low lows because I would drink when things were really good too and drink when things were really bad. So I try to keep myself like pretty steady, and I'm pretty mindful of, you know, my moods and my anger and my stress and all of that. But I'm thinking back to when I was in Italy last year with my best friend and we were like going out to dinner one night really late, and I was so tired and I was dealing with a situation with my now ex-husband, and I was like, maybe if I just like pick a fight, then I'll catch a resentment, and that's like Adderall for me. I was like, I can go to that late dinner and I can go out after, and we were joking about it, but I was like, why is that? And now I'm understanding it's that stress response like gives so much energy. And I could see how, you know, if you're trying to avoid things, if you're trying to numb out or whatever, you can seek that through your actions, your behaviors.
Yeah. That's so amazing that you were able to recognize that and kind of even laugh at it, because a lot of us do that. It's like, why did we just get into a fight with a friend or online with a stranger or a partner? And it's like, what is that giving us?
Mm-hmm.
Is it giving us a sense of power and agency? Is it giving us energy? Is it giving us, you know, what is it giving us? And that's an important thing to recognize, because we're often really attached to what it's giving us.
Yeah.
And in addition to all the harm it's causing, both for ourselves and our relationships.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, another example, not to just talk
give
about
myself. Give me the examples. I love it.
But
I love it.
I just went through a divorce.
I'm
and
sorry to hear.
It was so amicable and such like a loving divorce that it was so sad. And I don't know how to do sadness, you know?
Wow.
I know how to do like, fuck you, no, fuck you.
Yeah,
and you cheat on me and I sleep with your friends and blow everything up.
You know how to do the drama.
Yeah, I know how to do the drama, because that was my MO before I got sober 10 years ago. I found myself again kind of being like, well, let me find something to like get resentful at with him, because like anger feels more comfortable to me than sadness.
Yes.
I can just really see, like as I'm listening to you talking, how this can become habitual and then turn into a lifestyle.
Yeah.
Essentially.
What did you do in that process of going, like, did you sit with the sadness or?
Yes. I mean, I would find little things, or I'd send my voice notes to my friends, like, can you believe blah, 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 you know, and like get my little anger venting out.
Yeah.
But, you know, ultimately it was just sad.
Yeah.
There was nothing like bad in the divorce, really.
Yeah.
And so I don't know how to do that, because, you know, it's my first breakup in sobriety.
Wow.
And yeah, prior to that, my breakups were
huge.
You know, Yeah,
they were shows.
Bombs and
then
I would drink and, you know, take pills and numb out. I've heard you talking about certain feelings and not having the resources to feel those feelings. So can you talk about that a little bit? Because I would imagine that that kind of leads to this seeking for something to numb that.
When we can't have our primary feelings, we drop into a secondary feeling, a default setting of an emotional response, which means we're not actually able to be present with our emotional experience, and we're not using that to really communicate our needs or shift the situation. So if we think of like a crayon box, and we have all these emotions that are different colors, and based on our upbringing, you know, like this color and this feeling and this feeling and this feeling weren't allowed, like sadness was not allowed, or anger was the only emotion modeled in our families, or rage or something like that. And so we have all of these less crayons to express ourselves with. So we default to the ones we're allowed to have or that were modeled to us. So like for you, it's like, oh, the crayon of sadness wasn't in your toolbox, wasn't in your crayon box. So you would default towards anger to have some type of expression, except that it wasn't really expressing the truth that you were experiencing, and which creates a dissonance. It's essentially expressing a lie. We create all these narratives and we do all these things to perpetuate the lie of the expression. We move further and further from ourselves, which creates a greater sense of depression. And then we have to deal with that. And so it's like we're living an inauthentic expression of ourselves, and it's dangerous. And we have to keep up the narratives and we have to, like, you know, find things to fuel that false emotional reaction. So it's like you might go, oh, I have to stay in the anger because I can't be with the sadness. So I'm going to like imagine he did this And I'm going to play that story out while I'm in a fucking yoga class, right? We all do that. We all make up these stories that have never happened.
Yeah.
But here's the reality is that when we make up a story in our head, we have the physiological response as though it was real.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if I don't know about you, but like, have you ever had a dream about a friend or a partner? And in the dream, you got into a fight with them and you wake up and you're like mad at them.
Yeah. For like the entire day.
Yeah, for the entire day. And they are like, what the fuck is wrong with you? I literally didn't do anything. And like, and that's kind of like what we're doing in drama all the time. Uh-huh. You know, we're making up the stories. We're finding different ways to rev ourselves up and mm-hmm. away from ourselves.
Mm-hmm. I had such a revelation if I was looking at you, like, because
I was
just thinking back to my childhood and, you know, I don't think I had the crayon of sadness. Mm. So I had the crayon of anger and I had that dissonance and I felt like nobody saw me and nobody understood me.
Exactly.
And that came out as more anger and rage. And, you know, that for years got me to the point where I did need something outside of myself. And, you know, to what you were saying about like authenticity, I put up so many facades and everything of like who I thought you thought I should be and who I thought I should be to fit whatever.
Mm.
And I needed stuff to fuel that.
Yeah.
So
you just gave me chills.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, it's so right. It's like when we aren't able to express our true nature,
mm-hmm.
we then feel like the world doesn't see us. And maybe even the world's against us.
Mm-hmm.
And the truth is, we're not actually presenting to the world the truth of what we're experiencing because we don't have the capacity or the vehicle to do it.
Mm-hmm.
We're coloring with the wrong crayon.
Mm-hmm.
We're coloring with the default crayon and expecting everyone to see the blue, but we're coloring with red.
Right.
And then we're mad at it.
Yeah.
And then it just like, you know, perpetuates and perpetuates. Yeah. So well said.
Yeah. I wonder if that's kind of at the root of this culture that we're in now, like on social media, where how mean can you be and how many people can you get to like your mean, snarky comment? Yeah. And you know, there's this culture just in the comments of videos now. It's not just the videos themselves, it's the commenting.
Yeah.
And people run to the comments to participate in that. And I would imagine get some kind of bonding based on this anger, drama. I mean, can you be addicted to other people's drama? And can you be addicted to causing kind of drama like that because you're feeling that?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
So I call it depositing or depository emotions.
Uh-huh.
So it's like, I'm not able to be with my own expression. And so I project it and deposit on you.
Mm.
I deposit the story and the narrative I'm making on you. So I also feel that emotion. I mean, how often do we go and we scroll through social media and we see a friend or someone we don't even know, and we make up a story about what's happening in their life based on that one image,
mm-hmm.
you know, and then we're having, again, that emotional reaction. And then maybe we leave a comment and we've made up this entire story and narrative. And then they are the depository for that because we're not able to be with our own self and our own emotions anymore.
Mm-hmm.
It's really hard. And when you talk about, can we be addicted to someone else's drama, reality television, gossip columns, social media. I mean, here's the thing. It's like, there's something called an attentional economy. And that means like the highest commodity in this world right now is actually your attention.
Mm.
And I, as a marketing agent, I, as a fellow human being, have to compete with everyone else for that very, you know, precious commodity of your attention. And there are certain tools that capture it and maintain it. And those tools are what I call activation tools or drama tools.
Mm-hmm.
So we know that the thing that actually creates the sustainment of your attention and the capturing of it is to stress you the fuck out. Yeah. So the more I can use dramatic language, intensified motions, narratives, images, anything like that. You know, turn on the news for 5 seconds and mm-hmm. you'll see the mechanisms of those, of that activation tools.
Yeah.
It's like, this happened and this happened, but stay tuned.
Yeah.
You know, shit like that.
Yeah.
The suspense. And, you know, there was a really good research that was done around this, that the articles that got the most shares and likes were ones that evoked things like anger and frustration. We do this in our own lives and we create falseness in our social media posts. Like, I remember when I was younger, was living my life mostly to tell the story of it. That was part of my drama addiction. Mm. It's like, I wasn't living my life. Mm-hmm. I was like capturing these moments to then think how I would share the story of it on social media. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh, well, I know if I say it this way, it won't get as many likes. But if I add this whole narrative and these emotions in it and really build up kind of like, oh, I was so angry when someone said this to me, you know, anything like that, it's going to garner more attention. Mm-hmm. And then that attention, I get a hit of dopamine and I'm like, oh, I finally get this attention that I feel like you said before, like I wasn't seen by the world. Mm-hmm. So I'm suddenly felt like seen by what I'm creating, by the intensification and exaggeration of what I'm performing, essentially. Mm-hmm. Oof. Yeah. We are fucked as a culture.
We are fucked as a culture. I'm just listening to you thinking, well, what's the solution? I mean, it's something that I grapple with a lot too, like being a quote unquote public figure, having a presence online, and essentially my brand is me.
Yeah.
And, you know, for the last 10 years, I've been trying to take the focus off of myself because that self-centeredness was very toxic for me. So, you know, how do I present my authentic self and live in this attention commoditized, I don't know if that's a word, world, and still stay grounded? You know, it's really hard.
I think we can't. I'm going to be really honest. I think that like we, you know, there's this whole thing about performative authenticity that we're in the culture of authenticity. Be as authentic as you can, but not really authentic.
Yeah.
Be the authentic that will garner and get the likes and, you know, be really vulnerable, but, you know, make sure you have the right lighting with that vulnerability. And it is not real.
Yeah.
And so what we're losing is the ground to what is real and what's not real, because we're saying this is real, but it's actually a performative realness. Mm-hmm. And the moment you have an audience and you think about it from their perspective, it's no longer authentic in its true nature of authenticity. And so like, the moment I think about a post where I'm talking about my life and I'm like, oh, I'm so authentic, you know, sorry, you're not.
Yeah.
It's maybe some authenticity.
Right.
But it's also the moment you think about audience, you recognize you are on a stage and you are performing. Mm-hmm. And that is what social media is. Mm-hmm. That's what friend groups are.
Yeah.
The moment you like are trying to get a response from someone else, like, you know, when you were going through a breakup, when I was going through a breakup, how many times did we call that friend wanting a very particular response? Mm-hmm. Like telling them the stories of what our partners did wrong in a way that made sure we got that response. Mm-hmm. And then they were invested and they're like, oh my God, that asshole. Mm-hmm. How they said this and they said that.
Yeah.
You know, and it's not actually authentic because we're actually doing a little bit of performative manipulation.
Right. Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah.
That's and like, and there's a little bit of relief in just knowing that's what's happening. For me, knowing what I'm doing is actually a little bit of a power back to myself of going, oh, I'm making this choice.
Yeah.
Like I know what I'm doing. If I'm putting a post and I'm sharing a personal story in that post around some like healing quote, like it's important that I say like, I am doing this for me and I'm doing this for you.
Yeah.
And I know that certain things get better clicks and shares.
Yeah.
And that gives me at least the distance to be like, okay.
To not start believing that that's who you are.
Yeah. I'm not internalizing the performance.
Yeah.
As that is a truth.
Yeah.
And then.
And because, also if you internalize all the great comments of how much they love you, then you also have to give as much credence to the ones that are negative.
Yeah. And there's a lot of that.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
So much negativity.
The negative, like the world is hard, y'all. Mm-hmm. The world is fucking hard. And like people do not have their shit together. The emotional IQ of our world has gone down, down, down. And we don't have as many great skills as we, I'm not sure we ever did, but we don't have as many great skills to express our feelings and our needs in truly a non-performative and supportive way. And so like, you know, there's so much we're carrying, whether it's body tension or emotions unexpressed or trauma. And we're constantly looking for a place to relieve it in. And so like, it might be that we feel a momentary relief, and that's part of the drama cycle. We feel momentary relief from the like explosion into someone's DMs or explosion onto someone's comments. And we're like, oh, finally, it's a little discharge from all the shit I'm carrying that I didn't even know I was carrying with me through life. And we get hooked on that moment of relief, but it's disorganized. It's not true release in the therapeutic terms. It's more of like a dumpster fire of release.
You probably feel worse about yourself.
Yeah.
I would imagine, or maybe not. Some people,
it's a fucking volcanic eruption,
yeah.
Not like a stream that disperses something and like, and you know, like helps it move on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. My theory about that is that people need to feel superior in some way, even just for that split second, and then they move on to the next thing and then have to do that again. And I would imagine, you know, talk about addiction and tolerance. Like I would imagine your tolerance to that would build very quickly. And then you just need to ramp it up more and more.
Well, exactly. It's like, how many of us feel at some level in some moments of our life that we're a victim to the world, to the victim to the circumstances that are beyond our control? And we lose a sense of power, especially like, I don't know about you, but when I worked for someone else back in the day, I'm like, oh, fuck, this is like constantly taking away my sense of power, my sense of purpose, my sense of value. And like, I'm going to do anything I can to get it back. And so that sense of like the superiority, like I'm going to one up you or whatever it is, it's at the heart of it, it's desire to reclaim our sense of power that has been robbed in so many arenas in our lives.
Like many women, I experienced a lot of hair thinning and shedding when I was going through a particularly stressful time in my life. And if this has happened to you, just know that you're not alone, because hair thinning will happen to approximately 1 in 2 women. So thinning is normal, but it's not really openly talked about. And going through it can feel so lonely and frustrating. So if you are experiencing this and you want to do something about it, join the over 1 million people that are doing something about it with Nutrafol. This is what I started taking back in 2022 when, like I said, I was going through a stressful time. I had some health stuff going on and some personal things going on, and it was really frustrating. So I started taking Nutrafol that summer. And what I love about Nutrafol is that they have a whole body approach. So it doesn't just target your hair. It targets underlying root causes like stress, hormonal fluctuations, and nutrient gaps. By targeting that, that helps your hair grow visibly thicker and stronger. So I have to say, consistency is key here. I started taking it, I think, around June of that year. And by the fall, I was starting to see a lot of baby hairs coming in, especially along my hairline. And it has only gotten better from there. So Nutrafol is the number one dermatologist recommended hair growth supplement, with over 1 million people seeing thicker, stronger, faster growing hair with less shedding. Everyone's root cause of hair thinning are different, so a one-size-fits-all approach to hair growth just doesn't cut it. And this is why Nutrafol has multiple formulas that are tailored to give your hair what it needs to grow throughout different stages, such as postpartum and menopause, as well as for different lifestyles, such as plant-based diets. So you guys can actually go onto Nutrafol's website and you can take their hair wellness quiz. You guys know I love a quiz. And you can get a personalized hair health plan based on your specific root causes. So take the first step to visibly thicker, healthier hair. For a limited time, Nutrafol is offering my listeners $10 off your first month's subscription and free shipping when you go to Nutrafol.com and enter the promo code BLONDE. Find out why over 4,500 healthcare professionals and hairstylists recommend Nutrafol for healthier hair. Nutrafol.com, spelled Nutrafol.com, promo code blonde. Again, that's Nutrafol.com, promo code blonde. If you're anything like me, then you are probably pretty health conscious. You might eat clean most of the time, try to exercise, be mindful of things like stress and exposure to certain chemicals in your skincare and household products. But we have these little exposures that we encounter daily that really add up. And I think most of us don't think about these things. And one of these is our toothpaste. So 5 to 7% of our toothpaste gets swallowed every single time we brush our teeth. So that is an entire blob of toothpaste every 7 days. And most commercial toothpastes are filled with harsh chemicals, artificial flavors, and preservatives. So not really things that you would want to be putting in your mouth, let alone eating. That is why Bite makes dry toothpaste tablets made with clean ingredients that are sulfate-free, palm oil-free, and glycerine-free. Bite toothpaste bits are so convenient. You just pop a bit in your mouth, you chew it up, and you start brushing. So it'll turn into paste just like what you're used to, but with no plastic tube and no messy paste. I absolutely love this. So it did take me a few days to get used to, but now I can't go back to regular toothpaste. And it's also so convenient because they come in refillable glass jars and they send refills in compostable pouches. So not only are they better for our bodies, but they are better for our earth. There's no more plastic toothpaste tubes. Commercial toothpaste creates so much waste. So Bite makes plastic-free alternatives for everything on your bathroom sink, from toothpaste to mouthwash, toothbrushes, and deodorant, so you can cut out harsh chemicals and plastic waste without compromise. Bite's sleek glass bottles and jars also look amazing on your vanity and elevate your shelfie game. So no hiding gooey plastic tubes here. So Bite is offering my listeners 20% off your first order. Go to trybite.com/blonde or use the code blonde at checkout to claim this deal. That's trybite.com/blonde, trybite.com/blonde.
Okay, so I know that you had your own rock bottom with this. Can you tell us about that? And then, you know, talk about some healing modalities. I know, yeah. Right? I'm right there with you.
Yeah, no, my rock bottom, you know, and I, I kind of feel like I'm not, in retrospect, I'm not sure I could have gotten to the true process of healing had I not hit rock bottom. And mm-hmm. I know that that's often said from a lot of folks who have an addiction. Mm-hmm. When I was in my 20s, I was in a pretty damn toxic relationship. And what I realize even now is like, the amount of toxic relationships I was in to hide from myself, it was such a distractor to be in the toxicity, and it's such a means of avoidance of what my underlying trauma was. Relationships were my place to get the drama hit, the fix. Yeah. And so many of us use that. And so like I was in the process of getting divorced. I was in grad school. I lost this massive job with a rock band that I was working with. I lost my health insurance. I was getting sick and I was throwing up blood and like, we didn't know what the hell was going on. I was basically detoxing from my own toxicity and the relationship. You know, I OD'd. That's what I would say. And I did physically OD, but I also OD'd emotionally. That I thought I could always handle stress. I was like, I'm good at this. And what I didn't realize is I had a high tolerance for stress, not like capacity. Tolerance and capacity are different. Like you could have a high tolerance for alcohol or cocaine or whatever the addiction is. And my tolerance level had to keep going up in order to get the hit from the stress. And eventually I, through the divorce, through grad school, through the work, that I lost, all these things, it passed the threshold of my tolerance and I literally collapsed. I was declared dead for a moment. Whoa. You know, like, and I also happened like in accordance with getting roofied.
Oh my God.
And so it was like a bunch of shit in combination. Mm-hmm. But like, I just was hit rock bottom. I could not, and like, thank God I'm still alive. Mm-hmm. You know, my mom. Yeah. Came in and called the ambulance and was resuscitated. It took a while. I felt like it was a total reset on my nervous system. But I noticed during that time that I was hungering for normal. And normal for me was chaos. I didn't feel like myself until I was back on the phone with my ex and I was back in the drama. Or I would fight with my sister who was literally taking care of me. And I was like, or I would feel the sense of relief when I was watching violent movies. Mm-hmm. And I was like, this doesn't seem right. This is not normal. Like these things that I'm now realizing are toxic and like shit are making me feel normal and okay again. And so I had to do a massive detox. I had to really recognize all the moments that I was trying to rev myself back up to a state of like activation and stress. And I had to stop myself. I literally would like put out my hand and say stop to myself. And I had all these other techniques of like interrupting the desire to get stressed, like overscheduling myself over and over again. Like I found all of, I was fucking creative, I will say. Like when you stop the addiction, any addiction, you realize how creative you are like sneaking it in and justifying it.
Oh
my God.
Yeah, but especially something like that. So, you know, drugs and alcohol, like I don't need to drink or do drugs ever again in my life, but I do need to schedule things. How do you navigate that?
Yeah. So the first thing is like, okay, noticing, tuning in, self-awareness. What is it like when you're getting stressed out? Yeah. So I'm noticing like my own breath. I'm noticing my heart rate. I'm noticing how my muscles operate, like the tension in them. And that's called revving. So that's like when we're starting to get worked up, we're going revving. If I'm scheduling myself, I will pause and I will check in with my body. Am I in a state of trying to override and rev myself up? And if so, the first thing I do is I go pause, stop. What's underneath the hood emotionally of the desire to avoid right now? And I'm like, okay, oh shit, I'm sad and I don't want to fucking deal with it. I'm really hurt or I'm really angry or I'm feeling really lonely and I don't want to be alone with my feelings. And so that's why I'm all of a sudden overscheduling myself or I'm in that meditation class, I'm starting to think about my ex or I'm sad, but I play sadder music. Like all those things we do to avoid contact.
Crying playlists.
What, you got a sad playlist?
Yes.
Oh my God, what's on your sad playlist?
Oh my God. I can't even think of what I have there. It's all over the place.
Yeah.
It's the best though.
I have a bunch of Ani DiFranco on mine.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
Throwback.
School Night, Gray. Oh my gosh. I don't know why, but, and then Adele, of course.
Yes.
And I noticed this when I was going through a breakup. It's like, I never listened to Adele once before that. And like, sorry, Adele, I have been to your concert since then. And I started listening to Adele and I remember driving and crying and like singing the lyrics. And I remember just having this, like this thought in my mind going, what am I doing? It's like pouring gasoline on a emotional fire. Adele literally is pouring gasoline on an emotional fire. Is this what I want in my life right now? Like, is this what I need? And sometimes, you know, it's like, oh, I feel validated by like the wretchedness of like the emotional experience that she's singing about. I'm like, yes, I feel seen and heard. But then there's a way in which we've gone too far.
Right.
And it's such an important distinction.
Yeah. Yeah, I was going to say, sometimes the crying playlist can be good.
Oh,
I love like a flying crying playlist.
Oh,
that combo.
I have a flying playlist of movies to cry to.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay, I might need that from you.
It's mostly Pixar. I'm not going to lie. Okay.
But sometimes like it's a healthy emotional release, but there is that line where it's like, at what point are you, you know, kind of torturing yourself a little bit?
And this is where it's like when we're relying on a vehicle to have an emotional expression, the vehicle being a movie, the vehicle being a song, as opposed to like taking some moments to pause, feel my emotions. And if there's some tears there, let them out, you know? And that, it's really important because when we start to rely on vehicles, then social media and trolling becomes our vehicle and getting into fights with people becomes our vehicle. Like I have this underlying anger that I've been carrying since I was a childhood, since I was a child. And I'm going to use my adult relationship as the vehicle to try to motor it out of me by getting into fights. Like hell to the no, stop yeah. that shit, mm-hmm. you know? And mm-hmm. we all do it mm-hmm. because we're not necessarily attuning to ourselves in the here and now. We're trying to find all these vehicles to unload the burden we've been carrying.
Mm-hmm. You probably know that I moved into a new space at the beginning of this year. And something that has been really fun for me, aside from decorating, furniture, decor, all of that, is filling my kitchen with the things that I love. And I really am making a concerted effort this year to eliminate all kinds of toxic things from my life. So when it comes to our kitchens, a major contributor to chemical exposure is actually our cookware. So I have all Caraway non-toxic cookware. I have been using Caraway for years. I initially bought it because I loved their aesthetic. You guys are probably familiar with Caraway. It is pretty internet famous, and it's a staple for any home. It comes in various modern shades to fit with any design aesthetic. But now I really appreciate Caraway because their non-toxic kitchenware features a chemical-free ceramic coating, so food can be prepared with peace of mind that no chemicals will leach into your healthy ingredients. Also, all sets come equipped with complimentary easy access storage solutions to keep the kitchen tidy. I know that you guys are very health conscious, so this year, don't make the mistake of cooking really healthy and trying to give your body the best ingredients and then use toxic cookware, because it's just so counterproductive. And I used to do it. So this is such an easy swap that you can make to protect yourself and maintain that optimal health and well-being. So visit carawayhome.com/blonde to take advantage of this limited time offer for 10% off your next purchase. This deal is exclusive for my listeners. So visit carawayhome.com/blonde or use the code blonde at checkout. Caraway non-toxic cookware made modern. Let's face it, life can be stressful. It can be overwhelming. And when we are feeling tense and anxious, it's not just our minds that suffer. Stress can make a mess of your digestion and your immune system too. But here is the thing, your life does not have to be a constant downpour. So with Just Calm, the breakthrough new stress soothing formula from Just Thrive, you can say goodbye to frazzled nerves and hello to a steady, serene, more relaxed you. So the way it works is pretty amazing. Just Calm's proprietary mood lifting blend is clinically proven to help you relax and breathe a little easier in just 4 weeks. And for next level mood TLC, I love my Just Thrive probiotic. So the way that this spore probiotic works is that it banishes bloat and constipation, so your gut can produce more serotonin, which is your happy hormone. Plus, it supports better sleep, which we know is imperative when it comes to mental health. So with Just Calm and Just Thrive probiotic, you will have the ultimate stress-fighting duo to help you win the day every day. I highly recommend going back to my episode that I did with Tina Anderson last spring. The entire episode, we get into the science behind why and how these are so effective. And right now, you guys can go to justthrivehealth.com and use the promo code BLONDE20, and you can get 20% off a 90-day bottle of Just Thrive probiotic and Just Calm. So that's like getting a month for free. And on top of that, a portion of every purchase goes to Vitamin Angels. It's a nonprofit organization that saves the lives of millions of children and moms-to-be around the world by ensuring they get the vitamins and minerals they need to stay healthy and strong. So again, go to justthrivehealth.com and use the promo code BLONDE20 for 20% off a 90-day bottle of Just Thrive probiotic and Just Calm.
It reminds me of an interventionist that I had on my podcast, actually, and he was talking about addiction, and he said, you're going back to the source of pain looking for comfort.
Yes!
And that's like what all of this is, you know? And it's so interesting that we engage in these, you know, harmful, whether it's behaviors or habits, knowingly, knowing that they hurt us, but for whatever reason, that feels better than just what, being present?
Well, it feels better than two things. It feels better than the contact we have with the emotions, the trauma, the pain, because we often have carry a belief system that if we go back to it, it's going to feel worse than the original experience.
Okay.
The other thing that it is dealing with or is filling the void. And we talk about filling the void, that's a common phrase, but what it actually means is that oftentimes when we have had trauma, especially childhood trauma, we disconnect from our body, we disassociate. And so literally the void is the emptiness of where we once sat and belonged within ourselves. And so addiction is anything that fills that hole where we should belong and fills the hole and helps distract from it. Because it is extraordinarily lonely. We don't belong to ourselves or the world when we have had to dissociate and disconnect from ourselves as a means of survival.
Yeah, I can relate to that so much because, you know, I look back at my own addiction and all of that, and I can see even as a child, I was looking for external things to regulate how I felt inside. And I don't really think that I had much childhood trauma. Maybe there was something that I perceived, you know, as traumatic, but there were no like big T trauma kind of things.
Were your parents good regulators?
I don't know.
Because this is a weird thing because it's like, oftentimes I don't like going back and blaming parents, but it could be our family system. It could be a couple of things. It's like, what was the currency of love? Meaning, what was the way that we got attention and connection? So like in my family, you got attention when something was wrong. So I internalized that and I spent my focus and my energy and my time attending to and being wrong, like feeling wrong and like getting into trouble and really focusing on that. And so like that's an important thing to recognize as the currency of love. And the other is, like, how was the presence of our caregivers to help us regulate? And that's not their fault. There's a lot of fucking distractions as a parent that brings us away from being fully present in what's called co-regulation. So co-regulation is like, I, as the adult, support your nervous system to regulate until you can learn that on your own, called self-regulation. And if you don't have that, then you're going to keep searching for things that do that for you. And often we find the things that numb us as, and that we assume or think of that as a regulation. When really it's just a numbing agent.
Yeah, that sounds like me. I identify, with the latter.
Or like if we grew up in a house of chaos and the environment was constant, just yelling and crisis and whatever, then we might feel the most comfortable in the familiar and we will go and seek that. Like I lived in New York for 20 years and New York is the drama center. Like it is urgency culture. It is meanness. It is aggression. It is straightforwardness. It is loud noises. It is chaos embodied. And it felt like home. And I couldn't leave New York for so many years, even though we had a love-hate relationship, because I was like, this is the only place that feels like home. And what I meant was, this is the place that felt like my home growing up.
Yeah. It's so interesting because you would think that you would seek out things as an adult to heal that part of ourselves. Same with, you know, seeking out relationships that kind of mirror the relationships that we had with our parents, even if they were dysfunctional. And you would think that, no, you would find a partner that would be the opposite, right? But so many of us subconsciously seek out
the familiar.
The familiar, even if it's dysfunctional.
Yeah, familiar is safe despite its functional or dysfunctionalness. We're going to seek it. We're also going to do what's called reenactments. So we're going to recreate the scenarios by choosing the partners, unconsciously choosing the scenarios we're in that will bring us back to that familiar state in hopes that this time we might heal it. But we often don't because we're right back in the familiar, choosing our familiar behaviors and actions of preservation that we learn to begin with.
Are we just allergic to unknown?
It does require a lot of patience with the unknown. I mean, like if anxiety is uncomfortableness with the unknown or intolerance for the unknown, then it means that we have to sit in the discomfort of the unknown and unfamiliar until something new happens. And it's like, I can tell you like, drama was the spice of my life, you know, like everything else when it wasn't around felt boring. So it was like, I don't know, have you ever had like an everything bagel. Mm-hmm. And then when you go to a plain bagel, you're like, wah, wah.
Yeah, where's that little garlic kick? Salty garlic kick.
Exactly. And so like that was for me, like when I stopped engaging in the drama in all the ways I wanted to, when I blocked the impulse, mm-hmm. life was boring. And I totally thought like my therapist was going to find me boring. I thought my friends were going to dump me. Some of them did, because suddenly I wasn't the entertaining, mm-hmm. you know, dramatic individual that was fueling their own drama addiction, mm-hmm. that they were able to ride along the tornado of my life.
So how do you find stimulation now in other ways?
Ooh, that's a good question. It's funny because like when I'm in an argument with my partner, I'm like, just not interested in going there. And it's so interesting. I like watch myself and I'm like, I'm just not going to go there. And I just sit there and the desire from one end is coming at like more drama. And I'm like, yeah, no thanks. Mm-hmm. I'm just like, sorry. And I find delight in things that are more subtle. Like, you know, I think that's the beauty of when your life isn't at a decibel of a 10, that you really find like there's like, oh my gosh, there's a plant here and it's just so pretty. Like in the rest of my life, I would have been like too distracted by like the qualms of the world and the things that are going on between, you know, my friend group and all these things. I wouldn't have found just the beauty and like the lines of that plant there. Mm-hmm. And that makes me really happy that like the subtle things in life can be gratifying. Mm. That I can find pleasure in something so simple as like a plain bagel. Mm-hmm. Gluten-free, of course.
I love that. Yeah, it's so, I feel like it all comes down to mindfulness, right? Yes. Like being present, being able to be in your body, being aware of your intentions and your behaviors and your motives and actions, all of that.
All of that.
But I think it's so hard because we live in a time where, you know, we're just like, constantly like distracted from the second we wake up to the second we lay down. And I think there's so much, like you said before, under the hood that
so much
people don't want to look at.
And part of urgency culture and the way that marketing works in our world, and again, back to that attentional economy, is people are literally pulling our attention from us and directing it. Mm-hmm. They're taking our power of attention through essentially, again, those tools of stressing us out, and we are left feeling powerless in the world. So like mindfulness or attention back to ourselves and starting to feel like I have control over my emotions, how much energy and attention I'm putting into anything at any one given time is a reclaiming of your power.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Love that. Okay, well, tell everybody about your book.
Sure.
And then where they can find you.
Yeah. So the book is called Addicted to Drama: Healing Dependency on Crisis and Chaos in Yourself and Others. So the book is for multiple audience. So if you find can relate to some of the things we talked about, good on you. We support you and love you. And this book is for you. And if you find like, oh my gosh, that's my mom or my friend or the teacher I had in high school, then this book is also for you. It will normalize and help you understand what's going on. It will give you tools how to deal with the drama addicts of your life. And there are a lot of us out there. So there are a lot of tools in here, and also tools to help your own healing process, whether you are a drama dabbler or know someone who is.
Amazing. And where can they find you?
On social media, I'm at Dr. Scott Lyons, so Dr. Scott Lyons. My website is Dr. Scott Lyons, Dr. again as well. You can find me on my podcast as well, The Gently Used Human. You can find me walking the streets of LA sometimes and sometimes not.
Amazing. Thank you so much for coming on.
My pleasure. Thank you so much for having me. You're the best.
I hope you enjoyed that episode. And if you liked it, and if you like the show in general, please take a second to rate, review, and subscribe. It goes a long way, and it's actually the best way to support the show. Also, if you want to see more about each episode, you can head over to the Blonde Files podcast on Instagram. You can go to ariellaurie.com. And I'm always posting about each episode over on my personal page at Ariel Laurie.
Please note that this episode may contain paid endorsements and advertisements for products and services. Individuals on the show may have a direct or indirect financial interest in products or services referred to in this episode.